What's the science behind telepathy, precognition, the paranormal, and so much more? Up next, Marty Rosenblatt back with us. Get ready for an amazing night on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you along with Marty Rosenblatt. Marty has a MS degree in physics from UCLA, worked for 35 years in areas of high energy physics using computational techniques. He's been a president of the Applied Precognition Project dedicated to education and development of precog pros. Now, these are the natural follow-up to physics intuition applications, which he founded back in 1998 to apply remote viewing to predicting financial markets and sporting event outcomes. Marty, did anybody predict COVID-19?
Not that I know of. There are some people now, after the fact, who are saying that they had some remote viewing sessions that predicted it, but I don't think that's quite fair.
No, that's true. How have you been? Everything okay?
Yeah, everything is great. We're hanging in there, you know, under the circumstances, so I'm doing fine. Hope you are as well.
Yeah, I am. Still in the lockdown West Coast?
Yes, afraid so.
Yeah, it's crazy times, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
This is when we need our precognition and intuition and telepathy more than ever, isn't it?
Well, you know, we have more time for it, at least.
Yeah.
But using precognition, for example, to figure out when this is going to be over would be rather interesting to do. The problem with all of this, George, is it's not 100%. It's hard for people to sort of get that. You can easily become convinced that precognition is real, you know, using normal scientific techniques, double, triple blind. And it is. It's much, you get results like on sports events, financials, which are better than chance, but they're just not 100%. So if you were to say, hey, a year from now, this is all going to be over and pretty much like it was, you know, a year ago, that kind of prediction you just would not have great confidence in.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. You know, and even when we have these feelings of precognition, sometimes you're just not sure if it's real or not.
Well, that's correct. And sometimes, though, those are the times when it turns out to be most real, you know, because you can fool yourself. It's the mind is the most wonderful instrument in the universe, in my opinion, and but it's very complex. And it doesn't follow direct rules the way, you know, F equal MA does, Newton's laws. It's got probability built into it in a way which we still don't understand. You know, you mentioned the science of precognition. The science of precognition has proved that there's something going on there that still most people just won't believe because it has this probabilistic nature. And yet we know for sure, using all the scientific techniques of double-blind, triple-blind experiments, that you indeed can predict events with a much higher probability than chance. But while there have been some experiments, like I think you're aware of Russ Targ's experiments.
Yes, absolutely.
Nine predictions in a row, but then he did another set, and it indeed did not work. He had like six failures in a row. And that is what we're still struggling with.
Tell us a little bit more about your Applied Precognition Project, which you've been running for a number of years now.
Yes, that is, well, not only educational, but it's educational by giving people hands-on ability to work with their precognition, with their consciousness. They, members, and we have over 1,000 members, 1,200 members now.
Wow.
Not all of which do active precognition, but they all you know, stay involved and hear our discussions. And we have lots of different speakers, and we have our conferences twice a year and things like that. But probably a couple of hundred of them are involved in groups that do precognition on sporting events and financials. And these are real precog predictions. They make their prediction. They will know that Team A is the one who's predicted, or that the financial market is going to go up. We use the SPY, which is the Standard Poor 500. And we use stops and limits. I mean, these people can actually make trades, though I only recommend that if they've demonstrated that their precognition is indeed up at, say, the 60% or more level compared to a 50-50 chance of up or down. But the point is, and many of them do it not to invest. They do it to learn about their own consciousness.
That's right.
Imagine getting quiet and you generate a transcript which is intended to describe one of two possible photographs. We call them photo sites because, you know, a photograph has a lot of content in it. You can look at it, and not only do you get the colors, but you might see that there's sounds involved and other things. But there are two possibilities, one for the market going up, one for the market going down. And it's amazing how often you get, like, right-on hits. There's no question that it's a good match to one or the other. And this brings a new kind of appreciation of the ability that individual personal consciousness has, because normally you wouldn't think that's possible. They don't see the picture until after, so they make their prediction on day one, but they will not know the outcome or see the picture until, you know, day five or day two, depending how far in the future we're looking.
Do you think, Marty, that most people who practice precognition and intuition are successful people, whatever that means?
That is very interesting. I think when you're open to doing this, when, and I don't want to say believer, I want to say knower, when you know that there's more going on in your own personal being, I believe you do become more successful, more confident. You know, those are the kind of words, because you realize that you're really kind of a much grander being than we're often taught.
Let's talk about consciousness. Give me your thoughts on consciousness, and then let's get into some of the just the people from the past, the Max Plancks and the Erwin Schrodingers, who talked a little bit about this as well. But what do you think consciousness is, Mark?
Well, I was going to start with exactly those two.
Aha, okay.
They both basically said, and this is the major theme of all the work that I do, that consciousness is fundamental. They were forced to conclude this based on what they called, and it's still called, the measurement issue. If in quantum mechanics, again, it's interesting that probabilities is the most fundamental aspect, one of the most fundamental aspects of quantum mechanics. And for example, you can't really know exactly where, say, an electron is until you measure it. It has a probability of being in a certain place. Particles that have spin, they talk about spin up and spin down. It's a probability. But until you actually pin it down and measure it, then it becomes real. That's the measurement problem. And they were forced to say it's only when this measurement, which is bringing something into consciousness and making it real, that it is real in our physical world. Before that, it's in this probabilistic land of quantum mechanics, if you will. And
well, how do you measure what you can't see?
Well, no, but they have measuring devices which can measure, for example, with a certain uncertainty, the location of a electron. They can measure the spin of an electron with these very sensitive devices. It was these measurement devices that ultimately, it took a long time, you know, we're talking over 55, whatever, years ago, and this was all very controversial. It was ultimately the measurements and then some very clever theory that finally got quantum mechanics where it's no longer doubted at all. But with these measurements, you can measure whether a particle is spinning up or down. And I think you, I know, and probably most of your listeners have heard that information from light waves. A photon can be disturbed here, and yet it'll have an impact on its pair, okay? So these are two what are called entangled photons. So they come from the same source, and you tweak one, so you measured it. Another one could be hundreds of light years away, and yet it will feel that impact. That was one of the most controversial aspects of quantum mechanics, and Einstein actually never believed it up until his death. But indeed has now, again, with sophisticated experiments, been shown to be true. This is called non-locality. Usually, you know, when I turn on my flashlight, light goes out at the speed of light, but you can't get any information about that any faster than the speed of light. Well, that turns out not to be true. That locality argument is just false. In the quantum mechanical world, you have non-local effects, which basically are instant.
Mm-hmm.
And precognition is an example of that. You're getting information from the future. That's a non-local effect.
When this incredible universe was formed, Marty, did all these things come with it, the consciousness, the ability for intuition and telepathy? I mean, how did that come about?
Okay. I'm glad you asked.
Thanks. I make it easy for you, right?
Let me give you, and I'm going to make it as simple as I can, because actually the ideas are simple, but sometimes hard to kind of get deep down. And here is how it goes. The physical universe is not the most fundamental thing. We live in it. It certainly is real. It's got an objective nature. I wake up in the morning and, you know, I'm in the same bed I was when I went to bed and those sorts of things. However, this idea of consciousness being fundamental is deeper than the physical world. There is a, dare I say, spiritual world. The non-physical world, the spiritual world, is deeper, more fundamental, and I don't even want to say came first, because it is a thing. I call it actually, and I have a bunch of this stuff on the web, I call it the universe of collective consciousness.
Interesting.
Anything that consciousness touches, your thoughts, your feelings, everybody's feelings on Earth, past, present, and future. ETs, wherever they are, they're conscious beings. All of that is in this non-physical place, thing outside of space and time. That's why precognition, telepathy, all of that kinds of things work. So when the physical world was formed, and we think of it because with the physical world came the reality, the idea of space and time, but it came from a non-physical place. And I have this idea, not this idea, I think it's true, because there's nothing else that could be the intermediary between the non-physical world and the physical world, but the zero-point energy field, the vacuum energy, which no one now disagrees with. When you get real small, anywhere, any place, any time, you get down to the quantum level, in fact, the Planck level, 10 to the minus 32 meters or something like that, ridiculously small,
right,
as small as you can get. That level is where we have a baseline of energy. It's called the zero-point energy field. And that is the intermediary between the non-physical and the physical. Many physicists would still tell you that the zero-point energy field comes from nowhere. You know, what does that mean, nowhere? Well, that nowhere is this non-physical place where, if you will, the fundamental action causing stuff in the physical world to happen. So when you do precognition and you get quiet and you're intending to get information about a photo that you're going to see on your screen tomorrow, you're dipping down into this universe of collective consciousness, gathering information, comes through your nervous system, and then into your conscious mind.
There's a science behind this, isn't there?
Well, we have to kind of be careful. Usually when we say science, you have reproducibility. How do you reproduce this universe of collective consciousness idea? The science is, I guess I'm going to say yes, but I have to qualify that by saying the science is that precognition is real. I've given you an explanation for that, a kind of a model, okay? Like there are different kinds of models for quantum mechanics, different interpretations. This is an interpretation of consciousness. The science behind it is that in the physical world, precognition is real, telepathy is real, psychokinesis is real. I believe it explains things like ghosts. The experience of a ghost is dipping down into this universe of collective consciousness, which contains everything that humans experienced, and when they physically die, it's still down in the UCC, in this universe of collective consciousness. So I think the science in this case is the measurement of these effects. Now, the ghosts, you know, there have been measurements of them, but it's not like it gets done again all the time. We're talking right at this edge of objective physical science and something even bigger.
All right, stay with us, Marty. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back for more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Marty Rosenblatt with us as we're talking about remote viewing, telepathy, precognition, and mediumship. And all of this seems to fall under the same genre as the mind or consciousness, Marty, doesn't it?
No, that's exactly right. That's why this idea of consciousness is fundamental. And we like to capitalize the fun part because, I mean, you've got to enjoy. Here we are, conscious beings in this very moment. You really only have the direct experience of consciousness in this now moment. And yet through that, you get connected with this universe of collective consciousness, Akashic record. I mean, it's not like I'm coming up with something new. This stuff has been known for millennia. Precognition, the oracles of Delphi, and probably even before that. The fact that consciousness has these remarkable capabilities is well known and has been scientifically proven. The models for it are kind of interesting in a way because it may not matter. The importance of the models are, do you get an application that is meaningful out of it? The non-physical world is a world of ideas. So the idea of F equal MA, Newton's laws that got us to the moon and getting us to Mars and all that kind of stuff, my God, that really works well at, you know, the man size level. And that's how it was proven, by showing that it works. And I believe we're right on the cusp now of doing this with the advanced capabilities of consciousness, doing applications. Predicting the futures market is a really good application, which could change the way the financial markets operate. But we have to have rather high repeatability for that. And this is where the probabilistic nature of all of this comes in. But the fact that that's real, the fact that we can do mind-to-mind communication, how do you explain picking up information from somebody across the world in a telepathic way?
Yeah. Well, and you're accurate with it.
And you're accurate with it, and especially if it's someone who is close to you, you just seem to be able to pick that up, be accurate, and my explanation for that is very simple. You go down into the non-physical world where everything exists, past, present, future, all ideas, and you tap into that person, and you are able to communicate. There, you know, there's kind of an agreement first at that deep level, and then you communicate at the mind-to-mind level. But just as you said, it's just fantastic. Mediumship. It's only probably about 15, 20 years ago, I became totally convinced that the soul is on. You know, a lot of people just had that. I was always pretty agnostic to that. But once you begin to see that precognition is real, hey, my normal mind can't do that. Everything that I experience in all of these now moments, from my moment of birth to my moment of death, is stored, if you will, in this universe of collective consciousness, the Akashic record. Hey, the Bible talks about the Book of Life. These ideas are out there, but they're not usually connected with what are grander applications that are going to come out of this once we as a society begin to understand it more and more.
Some would say, Marty, that this is all a process of the brain. I differ. I think it's something outside of the brain. How about you?
Totally agree. You know, and science understands that in the sense of a distinction between the brain and the mind. And it's the mind that is in touch with this universal collective consciousness. And our physical being comes from there. You know, I use those words, but it's hard to really get that your source from the moment of conception. Think about the moment of conception when you really were starting out at like the quantum level, and you duplicated, your genetic makeup duplicated. Well, all of that is stored, and I think the storage system, if you will, in this non-physical place combines the genetic material, and it remembers it's you, okay? And that's why you wake up in the same place that you went to bed. And all of this is at the level of the non-physical creating the physical in space and time. But the potential, the insights for the potential, in my opinion, are connected with the ETs, the extraterrestrials. You know, you wouldn't think I would get involved with that, and I'm not, that's not my basic focus.
Yeah, how did you touch this thing?
Well, you know, you always hear about it. I go back to the days when the Blue Book report came out.
Yeah.
You kind of could tell that they were hiding things, and now they're in a disclosure mode. But when you see, and the government acknowledges that they're unidentified aerial phenomena, they don't want to call them UFOs any longer for a very significant reason, and that's the point I want to make. They have on radar, for example, objects moving at very high Mach numbers and essentially making right turns.
UTAPs, they call them, I guess, now, huh?
Okay, yes, exactly. In fact, you probably know more about all that than I do. But I know enough to know that what is being seen is not an object in our physical world. It's something which is touching the physical world enough that it'll show up on a radar screen. People will see it. I mean, you know, sightings are all the time. But they don't whiz away suddenly. They don't make right turns when they're in the physical world. So somehow, older probably intelligences have learned how to tap into advanced information from the UCC. You know, before the scientific revolution, people couldn't imagine what we're seeing now. Certainly couldn't imagine computers. Hey, you can go back to a time before microscopes and they couldn't understand illness because they couldn't see, you know, biological small things in the water that cause illness. And so our knowledge of the universe, both physical and non-physical, is going to continue to grow unless it get stunted. As you well know, there's a lot of controversy now going on about education. And I can't think of anything dumber than to try to limit education. That's what's brought us to the world we have now. But I also think we need to understand that we are all connected. You know, this universal collective consciousness, the Akashic Record, whatever you want to call it, is the epitome of oneness. Down there, everything is connected to everything else. And wouldn't it be marvelous to have a world where people felt that they were connected to everybody? So if you hurt somebody else, you'd be hurting yourself. You'd be hurting your own family, where right now, you know, it's them and us. So we have a long way to go. But I think the ETs have not only figured out a great advance, and you know what? They have places to go, too. I don't think there's an end. Just like there's no end to the physical universe, there's no end to the UCC. But they are clearly more advanced than we are. And I basically think they're friendly.
Marty, of these areas, ufology, remote viewing, telepathy, precognition, PK, which one could you single one out as the most important, or are they all important?
Well, A, they're all important, but if I had to choose one, I'd actually choose precognition.
You would. How come?
Well, because it blows the concept of linear time and linear cause and effect. When we do our and we call it associative remote viewing when we apply it to the, say, stock market, futures markets, because what you're doing is predicting something you're going to see in the future, and then generally you do feedback. Well, what is feedback? Feedback is looking at that picture in the future and sending information back in time to when you generate your remote viewing transcript. So cause and effect has a different kind of meaning now. That's pretty darn fundamental. And it just simply blows the normal linear time cause and effect. There is backward causation. In fact, science does conferences now called retrocausation, and that's just this idea that the future can affect the past in purposeful ways. So I would put that on the top of the list.
Did you ever come across any of the work of my aunt, Shafika Karegula, Marty, with regards to telepathy?
No, and she's your aunt. No, please tell me about that.
No, she's not with us anymore, but she was a psychiatrist back in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And she decided she wanted to devote her entire life and practice to the study of telepathy. She was fascinated by it.
Yes.
And she switched her practice, and that's all she did. She wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity, wrote another one later with some individuals, and she just loved it. Died way too early, but she, I think, would have been right at the forefront of all of this.
Well, and, you know, telepathy is another example of especially twin studies. Don't you love these twin studies when twins are...
Oh, my gosh, they're fantastic.
Right, separated at birth, they come together, and they are wearing the same kind of clothes. They have a dog with the same name. All of these.
And some force brings them back together.
Well, and that's right. And guess where the source of all of that is? The fact that they have so much sameness and the fact that the universe is bringing them together so we can experience that. It's coming all from this non-physical. And, you know, I use the word spiritual, and I think we ought to maybe talk a little bit about God. You know, we've had conversations before, and I have to tell you, just over time, myself, like everybody else, change, move forward. Their viewpoints change. God, to me, is indeed its normal kind of definitions of all-powerful, all-knowing. It's something like this idea of a God. And I don't want to give it too many characteristics, except that I'm going to say it's indeed all-powerful. It's all-knowing, and it is willing to share information about the future. That's how precognition happens. Now, the independence of us individuals having free will is a very important part of all of this. There does seem to be bigger things going on which impact us, which we don't fully comprehend, and yet I comprehend that I am a co-creator in it. There's some wonderful quotes about that, that we are co-creators in reality. And so this big picture idea of a God that from the UCC created the Big Bang, everything was initially entangled, it's still entangled, is out there. And yet in a way which we just should feel so good about, we have billions of people that have individual consciousness that are creating this world of ours and the universe of ours. There are other entities out there who are sentient beings, and they're also connected with the UCC to something which is grander. The you know, so the God concept is that grander thing, and the UCC may be something like God. But, you know, as much as I love and talk about the idea of the UCC, I have to quiet myself down a little bit and recognize that all systems seem to be part of a bigger system.
Yeah, much bigger.
That's right. And that's sort of where the idea of God comes in. The biggest, most magnificent thing you can imagine. And it may indeed have a strange kind of plan, but it includes our being co-creators in it.
Thomas, we're going to take a break, Marty, and come back with calls, including, of course, all kinds of folks from all over the place. And Thomas in La Jolla, if you are out there, check in with us. Tom's a little concerned, so we'll be back.